Yeah, judiciary order, Monday, May 2nd, 2011. First bill we're going to have a public hearing on is Senate Bill 77A. Staff, what does the bill do?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 77A places limits on an inmate's ability to file small claims, prohibits an inmate from bringing small claim actions against another inmate, requires an inmate to serve notice and claim to the public body, additionally requiring an inmate to serve the Attorney General when the public body is a state agency, requires a small claims department transfer the action to circuit court upon request of the public body, or in some instances, the Attorney General, creates a right of intervention for Department of Justice attorneys or paralegals, prohibits a court from entering a default judgment in favor of an inmate in an action against the public body unless that inmate has properly filed and served the public body, declares an emergency, and is effective upon passage.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, for the record, Max Williams, Department of Corrections Director. I appreciate you hearing Senate Bill 77. This bill started as a broader bill in the Senate. We worked with the various interests, particularly the ACLU, who had some strong reservations about the original version of the bill, in crafting what was a consensus amendment in the Dash 1 amendments, and is the version of the bill that you see before you today. This bill was intended from the department to try to address a challenge that we have had where inmates have used the small claims court process in a means that has been complicated for the agency, either in suing the agency in certain cases in small claims where the agency typically isn't represented by counsel from the Department of Justice, and that's been a problem, or has used it to actually sue other inmates in small claims. So you have two inmates in the system and they're suing each other in a small claims court. The purpose of this bill was really to rectify some of those abuses with respect to the use of small claims by offenders, to streamline a process in which we could actually allow litigation when necessary to move forward. We're certainly not trying to stifle an individual's right to bring necessary litigation against the department, but to do it in a forum that allows us to actually be represented appropriately by counsel, and also to protect the rights of other offenders in the system who may not be in a position to actually have appearances. In several cases, we had inmates who would sue another inmate in small court, in small claims court, get a default judgment, and then attempt to try to collect against that inmate by filing writs of garnishment against the inmate's trust account controlled by the Department of Corrections. So it became quite a complicated issue for us. The original bill included provisions which would have required exhaustion of administrative remedies in inmate actions against they would have to exhaust their remedies before filing an action against a public body. That was probably the piece that was the most concerning to those who had concerns about the broader nature of the bill as it was originally filed. We agreed for a variety of reasons to step down from that standard. That is the standard in federal court, is before you can sue the public body in federal court, you have to exhaust your administrative remedies under a congressional act. But we stepped down from that because we really believe that the key provisions of Senate Bill 77 that are before you today are the ones that are most important for us. So the Dash 1 amendments retain the prohibition on inmate versus inmate actions in the Small Claims Department of the Circuit Court. It retains the prohibition on class actions in the Small Claims Department of Circuit Court. In other words, you can't file a small claims action against the department, class action against the department in Small Claims Court. It retains the original versions of the bills, expanding the time for appearance by the public body from 14 days to 30 days. Oftentimes, we were not getting notice through the process in such a way to allow us to appropriately respond. And because attorneys typically don't represent individuals in small claims court, it created a challenge for us to make the appropriate appearance. It retains the requirement for inmates to serve the Attorney General when suing a state agency in small claims court. In other words, they have to actually sue the attorney. They have to serve the Attorney General's office with notice of the case, so there isn't this possibility of the matter being missed at some level in the department and then allowing for a default judgment. It retains the prohibition on inmate actions in the Small Claims Department of the Justice Courts. In other words, it requires that if you're going to pursue an action, it has to be in a circuit court and not in a local justice court, which again is a court that's not necessarily a court of record for these purposes. And then it adds new language that requires that small claim cases be transferred to the regular department of the circuit court as a matter of right upon the request of the public body or the attorney general. In other words, if we believe that the issue isn't well suited in small claims, as a number of these are at times where they attempt to bring constitutional or other kinds of issues in a small claims case, we have, as a matter of right, based on the language in this law, the opportunity to move that matter immediately to circuit court, which is, in our opinion, and I think the opinion of most folks familiar with this, the more appropriate forum. So with that, Mr. Chair, we believe that at this point there is no opposition to this bill. We believe that we've worked out any concerns that other folks have had. We think it will go a long way to helping us address what can be a fairly considerable problem. If you think about the fact that in a biennium we have 20,000 or so offenders moving through the Department of Corrections, invariably there are issues that come up, and there is a tendency among this population to often fall back to litigation strategies as a way to address their issues. We think this streamlines the process substantially for the department, while at the same time preserving and protecting the rights of the individual offenders to appropriately bring any legitimate claims they have in the appropriate form.
Max, do you remember what the vote was off the Senate floor?
I don't, Mr. Chair.
Okay, there it is. I missed it. My gracious, Senator Cruz, I can't imagine that he'd vote no.
I can't give you any idea about that either, Mr. Chair.
It was carried by Cruz, so I don't think he voted against it. Committee, you got any questions? I think you've convinced everybody.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee, for your time.
Nobody else was signed up on the bill. Mary, do you want to speak on the bill? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. I just want to go on the record very clearly. We represent the folks who work inside the prison system, as well as the assistant attorney generals. And I have been counseled heavily by the woman who handles the cases that go before these that the inmates bring forward, and she doesn't like representing inmates any more than I like having her represent inmates. So it would be a good thing to pass this bill, and we liked it in its original form. We like it even better in its amended form because now there's no opposition. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Thank you. Told you I'd be short.
Thank you much. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 77A and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 71.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 71 makes recipients of general educational development certificates eligible for general polygraph licenses.
Mary Lawrence. Marilyn?
Thank you, Chair Krieger. For the record, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I manage the Standards and Certification Program for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Chair Krieger and members of the committee, one of our department's responsibilities is to regulate polygraph licensing in the state. The enabling statutes for that program establish some of the minimum standards, which include educational requirements. There are two alternatives currently in the statute, either a bachelor's degree or a high school graduation plus 5 years of investigative experience. We have received inquiries from people who would be otherwise qualified for licensure, interested in becoming an Oregon licensed polygraph examiner, but unable to go through our process because they had received a general education development or GED certificate rather than a high school diploma. We had hoped to be able to define the requirement by administrative rule, but our Department of Justice legal counsel told us that the enabling statutes are too specific to allow a solution through the administrative rule process. So we consulted with the Polygraph Licensing Advisory Committee, which is the body that serves as our subject matter experts in this area of licensure. They unanimously and enthusiastically support the concept of allowing otherwise qualified people who obtained their education through the GED process to be able to be licensed polygraph examiners. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yes, sir.
Do you recognize other agencies' programs? In other words, I can remember I mentioned on the floor Sheriff Boyce years ago had a GED, and he had to actually get his GED because he'd never finished school when he went to war in World War II, and they had to have that to go back to Quantico and go to the FBI Academy in that. Do you recognize theirs in addition to your own, or they got to get your license too?
Chair Krieger, in order to be a polygraph examiner, they would have to be Oregon licensed. If they come into the state for a temporary purpose, there's a reciprocity provision that we would recognize for an out-of-state examiner who had a need to conduct a polygraph examination in the state.
Okay. Anything further?
Question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I missed your name, but... DPSST runs this program as far as licensing the polygraph experts. And how many do we have in the state of Oregon?
Co-chairs and representative. We have approximately 75 to 80. It's a fairly small program. It has resided with our agency or with our board for a number of years. We don't run an academy. The individuals obtain their education typically through a college or a privately run program generally recognized by the American Polygraph Association. We are the regulatory part of that, but we don't do the hands-on training.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 71. Do we have anything further before the committee? Not, we're adjourned.